If we put all the right inputs in, the kid will turn out bum 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 ba da bum 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 ba da bum bum. The kid will turn out the right way, which says that we believe in no God.
Interface. Not the same questions, not the same answers.
Hello, I'm Brad Johnson, and welcome to Interface, a weekly examination of Christian perspectives on theology, philosophy, ethics, and culture with Adam Ayers, the pastor of Disciples Church in Costa Mesa, California. Adam is also the founder of the Stoa Foundation, and we'd like to welcome to the studio with us tonight Jim Baldwin. Jim is a pastor at Disciples Church also, and we are sort of continuing a discussion we started last week on being Christians in a pluralistic culture. And how should we react to the culture around us? We wanted to continue that this week. Adding to that, how do we react as parents in a pluralistic culture? Adam, would you like to take us there?
Well, what comes to my mind is that very often in Christian dialogue, probably one of the most uttered phrases I hear as a pastor, and particularly as a pastor who says the kinds of things that I tend to say, is, well, what about the children? What about the children? What about the children? What about the children? You know, and people saying, you know, quick stop that man before he gets to the children, you know. that's one of the phrases I hear typically is, how will this society affect raising children? Now, how can you raise children in a pluralistic society, in a society where all of our values have been dislocated and thrown away, and with the result that our children will end up somehow deformed through this? Or that this is creating a situation in which it is impossible to raise Christian children. And I hear almost, between the two phrases, a brand new baby Christian, which is sort of a reincarnation of the theme, what about the children, or what about the kids? These seem to be used to justify almost any kind of stance that someone takes. And so when we were talking last week, I could almost hear in the back of my mind, yes, but if you consider pluralism something valid, don't you understand what that would do to the children? I'm thinking, what will it do to the children? And how should we address this? And Brad, you and your wife are expecting?
We are almost 3 months along now, yeah.
Ah, that's awesome. That's great. And Jim, you've had some broad experience parenting. You've parented in a secular marriage with young girls, your two young daughters, and you've seen that marriage dissolve. You've been a single dad raising two young daughters. As a young Christian, you've grown up and matured, and your daughters have moved away from you, and now you've had to endure that separation, and now you're remarried and raising a third daughter, a young infant, Sophia. So you've seen the gamut of this. You've seen the entire scope. There's not a situation of parenting or marriage that you have not experienced. So when you speak, I'm just dying to hear your opinion on these things.
Well, I've definitely taken the hard path of raising children, to have one 17-year-old and one 4 months old right now. There's quite a gap in between that. And I would never like to say this is the path to go to learn all the aspects of parenting, but it has happened and the experience is there. So I'd love to share what I know. I think this is always the most interesting time of the year, where you really find out the pluralism in parenting of, do I spoil my kid rotten and support this holiday, or do I pull back greatly from it and make my kid suffer through the holiday while all the other kids are out there riding new bikes and wearing new clothes and having new toys, or do I pick some middle road where all the rest of the Americans pick? Mm-hmm. And on top of that, to be a Christian and say, how does that fit into this? So this is a great time of year to talk about parenting.
As you as a parent, not having direct influence on your older daughters, having direct influence on your youngest daughter who is going to experience a different generation, so you really will have parented two different generations. When you look at those and you reflect back on the task it was to raise your daughters present in a family, present as a single dad, absent as a single dad, with other very secular influences around them, what things came to mind? What were your concerns looking, saying, my daughters are developing in a society that does not seem like a nice Christian culture? This is not a Christian-dominated worldview that they are encountering. What kinds of things came to mind as you see society changing, especially anticipating now what your youngest daughter will grow up in.
Raising kids, you know, before I was a Christian has really the same concerns now that I am a Christian. I think that the ideology of a parent is always to raise up perfect children. And the fallacy that falls very short is you have two people at best that are very imperfect trying to raise up something in a mode of perfection. And it falls very, very short from that. So you can either drive your children to fill those gaps of your imperfection and give them better things in this world than you had, or you can simply not acknowledge that that imperfection is even in yourself and try to do it all yourself. They get the aspect of two people that are very imperfect and being the only influence on a child who grows up with the exact same dysfunctions that the parents have. So I guess I have to tell you my philosophy first of raising children, wanting the best for my children, running into a divorce that I knew was the very thing that would hamper them growing up, knowing their parents' love, and really, in my belief, giving them the greatest platform to know love. So when I hit that, I really had to look inside and say, what do I believe in parenting? So here's my philosophy of parenting, obviously. You'll have to see what applies in your life. But mine is that two imperfect people cannot raise a perfect child. And that's the first rule. And that to base it off of that, I don't want me to be the only influence in their lives. I don't want to build a corral around my children, whether teenagers or whether even infant, and say I will be their only influence in life. I want them to have the other influences of other people. And so that was my first rule. My second rule was that they would know love. And they need to know that no matter what, they had my love, even in the worst of circumstances, which would be an every other week visitation, that when they were there, they had my attention, they had my love. And they would never have to doubt that that love wasn't there. And so I believe that was the greatest tool to be able to show them, and that they would be able to know that no matter what. And then the last one was to show them the Lord, not in the typical way, which was what I observed was to take them to church, to take them to Bible studies, but to see me seeking after the Lord and them simply observing the way that I did that, the challenges that I had in life of trying to be a Christian, especially coming from a divorce background, and to seek after the Lord and let them make their own mind up as they observed me, not to have the so-called religious habits in our house, but to do those because that was a natural expression of my love for the Lord. And really, in reality, let them make their own decision up. And at this point, the difference in my life is now that being a pastor is I have all the background of raising Sophia and my kids as kids of PKs.
Mm-hmm. Pastor's kids.
Pastor's kids and all the problems that go associated with that.
So what are the anxieties or concerns that come to mind? For example, I'm sure many would say, if you say, well, I'm just going to let them make a decision. Isn't that an expression of laxity, of saying, I really don't care about this child, whether or not their eternal soul makes it? What are your concerns? Like many persons would say, don't you want to create a world in which your children get gospel truth and that it's pretty much assured that they're cut off from other influential and harmful voices?
I think in that way, I don't feel like those are harmful influences. I think raising my children in this culture is no different than raising them in any other culture or any other time. I'm simply raising my children in the time frame that I'm in. And to pull them out of that environment and try to build a hedge around that environment, maybe on first appearance looks like I'm keeping them safe, but may not be equipping them with anything as soon as they reach adulthood and venture out of that so-called barrier or hedge. A simple point is you don't want your kids to smoke. You can't smoke and tell them that this is bad for you. And so they have to watch my life in this culture and see how I react and see the things that pull me in and watch that and say, those are the things that I will either choose or not choose, regardless of whether I've built that hedge around them or not. The world is just as appealing from being inside a cage as it is from being on the outside, too. And I think we run into that as soon as kids grow up that have grown up in Christian homes and run out and go to college for their first time can sometimes have just as bad as experience as one that started junior high in a public school. So I don't know. I don't know where that comes from. I believe we're in this time frame. There's nothing we can do in this culture. The culture exists around us. We simply can't put blinders on them and take them to Christian schools and drop them off and pick them up in the van and put the blinders back on and drive them home. All the same things that attract us attract them in a very influential time in their lives. Does that mean I will take my kids down to a school in a bad area and drop them off and trust that the Lord will protect them? No, but there's more of an aspect than just me in raising them, that the Lord has a very big influence in that, that there is protection modes that he puts on his people, especially his children, and that we need to teach them at an early age not to try to learn to protect themselves, but to take chances like that and to be a light in their culture rather than simply put the light under a rock and hope it still shines throughout the cracks.
One would assume, and I think many listeners would probably assume that or get a picture of you as a very loose father, but having seen your parenting, I know that you tend to be very firm with your daughters, and you tend to be rather conservative, kind of old school. That's the term that comes to mind. To look at you externally, one would say, oh, this guy's really old school in his parenting. Hmm. How is it that you have these stances and yet still have a very traditional form of relationship with your daughters?
I was just telling Brad, I love my relationship with my daughters. There's been no greater joy than just sitting down and being able to enjoy who they are. I am strict in certain ways, and I don't truthfully know where that comes from. The things I value the most is that they grow up giving the proper respect that other people deserve. And so I have been strict on them in those areas. I can't think of when I disciplined them that it wasn't for anything really other than that, when they showed lack of respect even to each other as sisters or to parents or to grandparents or anything. That is really when the discipline has come in. The rest of the things I'm actually very liberal on, the things of cleaning your room and making your bed, and those I just don't hold a lot of value in those. But I do hold great value in how they treat other people. And so I've been very strict on them, and I'm sure they would probably agree on that. There's a funny line we have every time they go in a restaurant. When they were little, I used to ask them, where are you at? And they'd go, in a restaurant, because I wanted them to show the waitress that same respect that we show everybody else, not like we had just had a paid slave come as we made a mess and she had to clean everything up. So that's kind of our funny line between us. So I think in those avenues, people would think I'm strict, but on the other ends, I can't remember really. As long as they tried and as long as I knew that their heart's intent were to love others, the rest of it really doesn't matter a whole lot to me. And I say that very loosely because there are days when, you know, I have been very strict and all, you know, disciplined, and it had none of those reasons there. And so I bring all the faults of every parent, which means I'm tired sometimes. And with that, they obviously know how to forgive me, and they always have. I would share that they have loved me greater than I have loved them, just because through all my faults, they still look at Dad and say, wow, that's Dad. And so that blows me away.
I don't think you can forget either that you bring two cultures to the table as well, Japanese culture and American culture. Mm-hmm. But having said that, I think one of the things that you bring up then is a very poignant reality that each person has a limited amount of energy and a limited amount of resource, both their own personal, they say, oh, I'm tired, I can only focus on certain things. And as we all know, in any given task, a human being can only do one human being's worth of task. And the task of parenting is larger, as you say, than any one human being can do. And I think because of that, something that you bring up is you have to choose which things you're going to parent about, and for you, respect rather than respect and your room and, you know, all of these other aspects, to say, I'm going to choose my battles and fight them strongly, rather than say, I'm going to fight on the PTA and I'm going to fight my culture. I'm going to try to resist the entire movement of all my culture. I'm going to work at living my life in integrity and sincerity. I am genuinely going to be seeking the Lord rather than trying any other numbers of ways to deal with this problem. I will seek the Lord, and I will model that in front of them. I will seek the primary values, love and respect and honor, and then I will let them work out those other details to choose your battles wisely. I think that's great wisdom along with that, one of the things that you bring up, like the schools, the environmental things, I can't help but think of the conflict that there is between saying we are persons of faith who believe in the supernatural, and yet our actions are based on an understanding that is purely mechanical, and we would say quite Skinnerian or Pavlovian, behaviorist models, purely secular models of how human beings develop, in which we say a human being is the sum total of their influences. And if I correct all of these influences and make these influences the perfect environment, I have to have a perfect environment in the school, I have to have a perfect environment in the home, I have to have all these perfect environments, because what we're saying in subtext is I really believe that my kid is a product of his or her environment. And it's a purely mechanistic, mechanical sort of a situation where if we put all the right inputs in, the kid will turn out bum 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 ba da da bum 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 ba da da bum bum. The kid will turn out the right way, which says that we believe in no God, because we believe that our faith is subject rather to the influences of behaviorist, environmental, nurture versus nature sorts of things. On the other hand, we also say by our actions that we don't believe what we hold to in our faith stance, that human beings, all human beings are sinners, will be sinners, and will turn out as rebels against God. We evangelize because we believe every human being that ever lives is a rebel against God, ultimately lost and needing saving, salvation. And yet when it comes to parenting, we turn around and we say, but if we can make the culture just right and my family just right, and if I can do all the right things as a parent myself, somehow I will find the magic key and I will get this combination and I will be the one who raises a kid who is not a rebel against God. So we're always looking for these factors. Yes, but if I put them in a pluralistic school, they might be rebels against God because that might eat away at their faith. Not realizing that what we profess, our faith that we want them to hold to, is that nobody comes to faith without first being a rebel. Mm-hmm. And so we say, I don't want anything to erode the faith that all human beings are depraved and need salvation. But we say if we put them in the right situation, they won't be a sinner rebelling against God and needing salvation.
Mm-hmm. You mean all those kids in the Christian schools aren't good little perfect kids?
Oh, they are. But that's part of the philosophy of the Christian schooling and Sunday schooling and church involvement too. It's a big card in church expansion, church growth sorts of things, to say, if you put your kids in this community of faith, your kids will turn out good, your kids will turn out healthy, your kids will grow up and love God, which directly contravenes what we say about our faith, that all persons grow up not loving God. So which is it? You know, because we're wanting them to hold to this truth, that all people are sinners.
On top of all of that, I think that we are, as parents, very reactionary, that we have reacted over the last 30 years of trying to repair what we believe it was our parents' fault. Mm. And so we will parent differently than we were parented in hopes that we will bring out a different product, that our kids will look differently. And I think ultimately love us in a way that we can't love our parents because of the things that we viewed as incorrect as we were raised. And yet, in many of those ways, the elements don't matter. I've never run into a child that said, my parents disciplined me exactly enough. They either didn't discipline me enough or they over-disciplined me. That there's never very many kids that I go, here is, my parents just were perfect on their discipline or perfect on their love or perfect on their time that they spent with us. And so there's an unrealistic goal at the end of this is, if I view things out three steps ahead, my child will be perfect in the Lord, will love me and respect me as parents, and we will build out a perfect product. And I think that's the fallacy of it, that for the greater influence, you can do everything right and come out with some very, very rebellious kid who doesn't want any of the values that you instilled in him, whether you protected him, whether you didn't.
Which is apparently what happened with God's parenting, both in the Garden of Eden and in heaven itself.
Exactly.
You know, he did perfect parenting and he ended up with rebels.
Right. I think that the greater movement needs to be is to develop your child to ultimately not need you at all. And that's, I've seen that in the last years of my kids being teenagers, is to move them towards my influence becomes a lot less and everybody else's influence grows. Right now, the greatest influence in my 17-year-old isn't myself. It is her teachers. It is her professors. It is her youth pastor. It is her friends. Mine has diminished quite a bit. And so no matter what I say at this point, it's already lost its influence. And if I've raised to hold on to her, I can be threatened at that stage. But really, at this stage, I enjoy the influences that she has because I've watched her choose what influences are around her, and they're all healthy. And I hold a lot of that to the way I raised her, but a lot of that through a lot of hours of praying. I hold to what Billy Graham says very, very firmly of there's a diminishing effect in nagging and, you know, screaming at your child to be an adult, and there's a greater effect of sitting back and praying and allowing everybody else to have their influences in that. And I've seen that work.
Yeah, because, again, as a matter of our faith, we say that when we were sinners, Christ died for us. When we were not seeking God, God sought us out, that God loves us that much. And hopefully we believe that he loves our kids that much and that he will seek them out when they are rebels. But one of the things you bring up that I think is very, very important is that aspect of wanting to correct our parents' mistakes, which is very much a hidden way of saying, my sins are not my fault. My sins are my environment's fault. The reason that I ended up as a rebel against God was because I had the wrong influences in my life. I heard the wrong things, somehow trying to dislocate the real desire and urge to sin and to establish my identity by throwing off the identity that the Lord would want for me as some other influence in my life.
Mm-hmm.
Rather than saying, this was mine, it came out of me, and this is who I ended up being. And I think as parents, we tend to say, if I can find the flaw that my parents did to make me this way, or that the environment did to make me this way, then somehow I can beat the system, and so I'll find out, and I'll keep those flaws away from my child, then my child won't end up like I am. And that we want to somehow dislocate our own flaws, place them on our children, and then beat them out of our children. When it's reality a matter of humility, saying, God, I need you. I need a Savior. Come rescue me. You rescued me. Come rescue my kids. Come rescue my kids from themselves and rescue my kids from me. Not from the whole society around them, but from their own weakness. That's why I needed God.
Yeah, I think the greatest experience that I had was to finally figure out that I didn't know how to be a parent and to look to God to say, how do I do this? And the Creator can tell you how to do this, but you must reach a point where you don't know what you're doing. The babies don't come with manuals, and you only know at the end. That's why grandparents are such great parents at the end. As you're going through it, you forget of all the stresses of every day trying to parent and try to live with yourself and grow yourself. So by no means do I want to sound like I'm the expert telling everybody else. I know the struggle of being a parent. And I think the struggle in itself of knowing how would God, these kids are on loan, and how will I treat these kids that God has blessed me with? In humility is the way to raise children, and to always question that. What image will they look like? Will they look like me, or will they look like him by the time I'm done?
I think that's a great place to wrap it up today. We've been discussing raising kids in a pluralistic society with Adam Ayers and Jim Baldwin. Guys, thanks for being here today.
Thanks. Thank you, Bradley.
Thanks to Chris Holowaty for engineering the show today. Thanks to Media City Sound for helping to make Interface possible. And thanks to you for listening.